This conference will now be recorded.
It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Bengaluru, India. Rohit Potti began his journey into the world of investing under Professor Sanjay Bakshi at MDI. He spent around 3.5 years at JP Morgan as a credit analyst before quitting to do investing full-time in 2016. He manages his family money and is also part of intelligentfanatics.com, where he contributes articles on Indian entrepreneurs. On behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Rohit. Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity, John. It was a surprise to receive your invitation, and I hope to do justice to the faith you've shown in me. Hello, everyone, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule. The topic I'll be covering today is the nonlinear impact of velocity. But before velocity, let's talk about stories. I believe stories are quite powerful. They entertain, they engage, and they convey important ideas elegantly. And so, I'll begin with a story which all of us know, that of David and Goliath. This took place around 3,000 years ago in a war between the armies of Philistines and the fledgling kingdom of Israel. To resolve the deadlock that existed, the Philistines sent for their champion Goliath. In the Israelite camp, no one moved. Who could win against such a terrifying opponent? Then a shepherd boy stepped up. His name was David. At first glance, it seemed as if the fight was grossly unfair. Goliath had formidable advantages: physical size, strength, years of training, strong armor, weapons of his choice, etc. On the other hand, David was a common shepherd, trained in the art of protecting his flock from wild animals. He had a sling and a few pebbles. But still, it was David who won. I love this story because I believe it conveys many important ideas. But for the purpose of this presentation, we'll focus on one particular aspect of it: the pebble. David, due to his years of practice at using the sling, was able to hurl his pebble at enormous speed at Goliath's forehead. It is amazing to think how it was not the mass of the pebble that mattered, but it was the pebble's speed and David's accuracy. Despite weighing only a few grams, the pebble generated enormous kinetic energy due to the velocity at which it was traveling. So it was not the pebble that killed Goliath, it was the velocity. Kinetic energy is one of the fundamental forces in the universe. As you can see in the screen, we do not know why it is so, but kinetic energy is impacted non-linearly by velocity. For some reason, as far as the kinetic energy is concerned, the universe likes velocity more than it likes mass. This is a pretty famous quote by Joseph Tuzman. One way of cooperating effectively by the world, in my opinion, is by harnessing velocity. I believe businesses or people who harness velocity effectively tend to enjoy similarly disproportionate outcomes. Let me try and illustrate this with an example. Aravind Eye Care is the largest eye care system in the world. Since 1976, Aravind has treated over 50 million patients and performed over 5.5 million surgeries. And more than half of these surgeries were for either free or at highly subsidized rates. And before you think this, no, the organization does not run on charity. They're almost entirely self-funded and vigorously profitable. And once again, no, the quality of care is not compromised. The clinical outcomes at Aravind are among the best in the world, if not better. Today, Aravind is the largest eye care system by far in the world, with 12 eye care centers, 63 eye care clinics, a manufacturing setup, a consulting division, and a research center. And do you know how Aravind began? It began as an 11-bed facility, of which 6 beds were for non-paying patients. Aravindai owes his existence to the obsession of this man, Dr. Govindappa Venkataswamy, affectionately known as Dr. V. Dr. V was an intelligent fanatic. He had quite a painful childhood. Quite early in his life, he developed lifelong psoriasis, which is a painful skin condition. And then later, right after his graduation, he developed rheumatoid arthritis. He had just turned 30, he was engaged to be married and about to begin training as an obstetrician. Instead, at the prime of his life, he was hospitalized and bedridden for 2 years. The combination of psoriasis and arthritis was mistaken by many of his fellow human beings for leprosy. And many a time he was not allowed to enter trains or restaurants because people thought he had leprosy. And also, because his arthritis crushed his dream of becoming an obstetrician, he pivoted to becoming an eye surgeon. I personally find it fascinating that his deep suffering at the hands of fate and fellow human beings did not make him a bitter man. Instead, it filled in Dr. V a deep empathy towards the suffering of the poor. It was during his experience as an eye surgeon that Dr. V saw the suffering caused by cataract. Cataract could be cured by a simple surgery. But unfortunately, the surgery was beyond the means of most of the poor in India. In fact, the life expectancy of a blind person in India reduces to 2 to 3 years after they become cataract blind. This is because they are largely seen as a burden on the family and ignored by their own family members. Many, in fact, don't ask for food or don't do any work because of their pride, and they end up starving to death. The thought of a cure is as much beyond their psychological reach as it is beyond their economic reach. Dr. V was moved by this plight and he decided to do something about it. In 1976, after retiring from the government hospital at the grand old age of 58, he started Aravind Eye Care. His ambition was to remove needless blindness in India. The extent of his audacity is evident with the fact that there were 12 million blind people in India at the time, the largest in the world. This audacity of his ambition is even more evident with the fact that the center started with just 11 beds, of which 6 were for free patients, patients who could not pay. Now let's just take a moment to think about this. 11 beds, and his dream was to remove the blindness of 12 million people in India. In pursuit of this quest, he even convinced his siblings and their spouses, who were well settled abroad, to come back and join him in his crusade. In his quest for success, Dr. V harnessed many potent forces in the universe. One of them was that of velocity. I remember and love this quote from when I was at school. The founders at Aravind followed this advice quite literally. They worked longer each day and each week than an average doctor. For example, summers in Tamil Nadu, the state where Aravind is based out of, is extremely hot, and the people at Aravind could not afford an air conditioner. So the family did the logical thing. That was logical to them. They started operating in the night. Working longer and harder than others lets you do more in a given period of time, which is of course a form of velocity. It also brought to bear the tremendous power of the 8th wonder of the world, compound interest. The doctors that led Aravind had decades of experience and believed firmly in the cause of their mission. When you truly and completely believe in what you do and spend a lot of time doing it, you maximize the rate of compounding. And when you do what you love for a long period of time, you maximize the tenure of compounding as well. And as per the compound interest formula, the end result or the amount increases disproportionately with the increase in rate and time. In case of Aravind's doctors, this meant they could perform more surgeries than an average surgeon could with lower rate of complications. The human mind is quite fascinating. When it is deeply obsessed with a particular problem, it tends to find answers at times in the most unlikeliest of places. Dr. V found his solution for his problem of cataract in MacBee. While most people saw in MACD a place for quick food or a source of harm to public health, Dr. B, on the other hand, saw a solution to his problem. The quote you see in the presentation is that of Dr. V's. The MACD model works on maximizing velocity. By designing a system that thrives on producing consistent quality burgers quickly, MACD maximized the number of customers it served, which led to larger word of mouth marketing, which then led to increased scale and market share. Dr. V realized that cataract surgery had the same characteristics as the burger industry. A cataract surgery is the same procedure performed repetitively with little variation. The facility setup, training, and operating procedures could be standardized for a variety of different settings and circumstances. The per surgery unit cost varied little, which allowed for very accurate cost projections. Inspired by what he saw at MACD and coupled with his intimate understanding of the nature of cataract surgery, Dr. V implemented an assembly line technique to maximize the impact of eye hospitals. Basically, he redesigned his system to primarily maximize velocity. At Aravind, the entire procedure, right from patient registration to routine checkup to final surgery, was broken down into a series of discrete steps. Each step in this process was done by a separate individual. For example, just escorting the patient from the waiting room to the doctor is done exclusively by one person. In most clinics, a majority of the tasks are performed by doctors, which is an inefficient approach, as in most cases, it is the doctor who is the major bottleneck in the process and the vital cog in the value chain. In Aravind, the scarce resource, that is a surgeon or the ophthalmologist, performs only the vital parts of the process: the preliminary exam, the final examination, and the surgery. This thus maximizes their impact. They follow this approach even inside their operating theater, and the results are visible on the screen. While the number of employees in an individual Aravind hospital is much higher than for an average hospital, the outcomes of the surgeries per hour done is much higher. So while the vital parts of the surgery and the operation process is done by trained surgeons, the remaining parts are delegated to highly trained paraprofessionals. The doctor's attention is thus focused on only the most vital parts of the process, which sharpens the direction of the velocity. This also allows for more by, so this sharpens the direction of velocity by allowing for more focused attention, which leads to lower errors. I love this mental experience curve mental model of Charlie Munger. The experience curve benefits imply that with time, the cumulative experience of the surgeons lead to extreme specialization. This extreme specialization leads to lower wastage, improved methods of surgery and operations, and increased efficiency. Thus, by doing more surgeries on average, the eye surgeon counterintuitively ensures better care and surgical outcomes for his or her patients because they become better at their jobs over time. When surgeon becomes better over time, the quality and quantity of surgeries improve. And when surgery quality and quantity improves, more patients queue up at Aravind. And so, the task discretization that Aravind implements results in each person in the workflow repeating a smaller portion of the whole task. When a smaller portion is repeated incessantly over a long period of time, the competence of the person performing the task improves. This in turn results in better clinical outcomes and at the same time allows for larger volumes to pass through the system in a given period of time. And when larger volumes pass through a system in a given period of time, economies of scale kick in. The larger the volumes that pass through a system in a given period, the higher the utilization of various resources and the lower the unit costs. Thus, velocity designed for in the Aravind system leads to magnification of experience curve benefits, which results in significant economies of scale. And the benefits of such economies are shared with the customers in the form of subsidized or free surgeries for the poor. This business model was the outcome of Mr. Vishal Khandelwal's interview of Saurabh Madan. And one can read about this business model both in Microcap Club website as well as Safal Niveshik website. Ian Castle has written a wonderful post in Microcap Club on the octopus business model. In case of Arvind, the velocity and compassion that they designed in the system resulted in massive numbers of patients treated each year. And so while they started off as primarily a cataract specialist eye clinic, the sheer number of patients with varied eye conditions allowed Arvind to develop significant expertise in rare eye conditions. Thus, slowly it evolved from a cataract-focused organization to a comprehensive eye care system. Just as an octopus wraps its tentacles around its prey, Arvind wraps its tentacles around pretty much any problem that is eye-related. In another octopus analogy, by providing high-quality care for high-complexity eye conditions, Arvind is able to generate higher income, which further allows it to subsidize the services for the poor. This in turn further increases the goodwill among its customers, which further increases its volumes, which further helps Arvind improve quality, and this virtuous cycle is continuously repeated. In a study done in 2010, it was found that the National Health Service for the United Kingdom does a little more than 500,000 surgeries annually. At this point, Arvind did around 300,000. While the National Health Service spent around 1.6 billion pounds for this 500,000 surgeries, Arvind spent 13.8 million pounds, less than 1%. And mind you, they did this with better clinical outcomes. That is, they had lesser complications. Also, as shown in the chart in the screen, an average Arvind surgeon does approximately 2,000 cataract surgeries a year, while the number for an average Indian eye surgeon is 400. For the US, it is less than 200. A point to note here is that velocity differs enormously from speed. Growth without focus on profitability or diversification just for the sake of becoming bigger, faster is speed. There is enough literature out there which talks about the pitfalls of unfocused growth, and so I won't speak about it much further. But what interests me here are the cases where velocity for one party can become the speed for another party. For example, let's consider this age that we live in, where the amount of data available is increasing exponentially. This easy availability of increasingly larger quantities of data is used by companies to target customers more effectively. Information has now become one of the key raw materials for businesses ranging from financial service to retail. This increased information about the customers and their buying habits is allowing companies to offer targeted and customized loans while at the same time maintaining credit quality. Thus, data availability is allowing companies to increase the velocity in their businesses, which is wonderful, right? Or is it really? Let's just consider this situation from another perspective, that of a customer. An acquaintance of mine recently graduated from an engineering college and was offered a job in one of the big IT companies with a salary of around $300 per month. Now, he's a great target for a bank. He has a steady job at a stable company. Within 6 months of his appointment, he bought a stylish bike for an amount of $2,000 using his credit card and a vehicle loan. Now, this is in addition to his monthly purchases of clothes and other gadgets. And so, within the first few months of his employment, he's heavily indebted. This situation is akin to being on a treadmill with a steadily increasing speed. Now, bringing this together, while being able to provide loans quickly to the right customer increases velocity for the bank, for the customer, it is akin to growth for growth's sake. It is nothing but speed. And when the desire for accumulation among customers become widespread, driven by fancy advertisements, encouraged envy, and social proofing, the indebtedness at customer level increases disproportionately. This could eventually translate into structural risks at the society level. So as is evident, I'm quite fascinated by the impact velocity can have on a business model. And so I made an effort at teasing out some of the characteristics that allow an organization to maximize velocity sustainably. While I do not believe the list is exhaustive, according to me, these are some of the few key traits. I'll go through them one by one with different examples. The trait of decentralization can probably be best explained with an example. I'll narrate an excerpt from the book Intelligent Fanatics Project. In 1990, Midway Airlines announced that the company was out of cash and was closing its doors in Chicago. This provided any airline an opportunity to swoop in and take over. Southwest was already prepared. They had a team in Chicago before Midway's announcement was made. The next day, Southwest team of lawyers was negotiating with the Chicago city officials, trying to get use of gates at the Midway airport. There was already a team of service personnel at Midway on standby. By early afternoon, Southwest had already agreed to spend approximately $20 million on the Midway airport. Shortly after, the mayor had a press conference announcing the deal, during which a reporter asked Southwest vice president, "When could the public see a sign of Southwest commitment to Chicago?" The vice president replied, "Go out to the airport, you'll see it right now." This speed allowed Southwest to capitalize on 18 gates at the Midway airport and gain a more than 50% market share in a short time. Southwest was more than 2 decades old at this point of time. One would think that a 2-decade-old organization would not be so decentralized and would not be able to respond so quickly. How many other 2-decade-old organizations do you know that can respond so quickly? In an age where companies, people, and businesses are obsessed with efficiency and optimization, redundancy might seem like a strange trait to pursue. Let's consider the way Mr. Buffett runs his cyclical insurance operations. When accidents and catastrophes are few and times are good, the insurance industry's short-term memory and desire for market share leads them to write policies at rates that are too low. At this time, Berkshire stays below the radar, writing only those policies which make sense to them, and they lose considerable market share. But when calamity hits and this industry has burnt itself, the pricing discipline becomes better. Berkshire becomes an aggressive market participant, writing huge amounts of business. The redundancy here is that Berkshire assures its employees they won't lose their jobs due to market conditions, either good or bad. By assuring jobs, Berkshire operations are overstaffed in a downturn. But in an upturn, this redundancy is maximized to the core in the form of aggressive increase in premiums. By refusing to participate on bad terms while being overstaffed and participating heavily when odds are in favor, Berkshire is exploiting the power of velocity through redundancy. The culture of customer obsession is one of the most important ingredients for success in almost all good companies. Cera Sanitaryware is a sanitaryware, faucet, and tiles company in India with a market cap of approximately $600 million. It has consistently enjoyed good profit margins and returns of about 20 to 25%. While there are many characteristics which led to its success, a key trait has been that of customer obsession. Cera was started in 1980, a time when India was a closed economy. The production of even the private sector was controlled by the government and it was a seller's market. The customer did not have many choices. Thus, it was the seller who was the king then and not the customer. Even in this environment, when it was not required, Cera offered a wider variety of colors, designs, and after-sale service to the customer. A policy of the company which further substantiates its customer service focus is its 44-hour delivery policy to its dealers. This 48-hour deliver policy basically maximizes velocity. Now, Cera sells its wares to its dealers first, who then sell it to the end customer. To service the dealers promptly, Cera has strategically set up depots across the country to ensure that any order placed by the dealer reaches the dealer in 48 hours. Now let's just think of the benefits of this. The fast delivery ensures that the end customer is happy. In India, the end customer is generally a real estate player who requires cash flows to come quickly. And so when the product is delivered quickly, he is able to complete his projects quickly and thereby get cash from his customers quickly. Similarly, the dealer is happy because it ensures lower inventory investments, which implies lower capital employed. It also makes the dealer happy as it allows him to provide quick customer service, thereby improving customer loyalty. And so in case of Sarah, the focus on velocity results in a win-win outcome for the entire value chain. I'll cover balance sheet strength and deep expertise in the niche both with the example of Oberoi Realty. Oberoi Realty, run by Vikas Oberoi, is a $3 billion realty company based out of India. Oberoi is unique in the sense that it became one of the largest real estate players in the country by focusing on just one city, the city of Mumbai. Vikas Oberoi has been involved in the Mumbai real estate market since the age of 17. In the book, The Consolidators, Mr. Oberoi recalls that by the time he was in his late teens, he was already heading a project. For decades, he has been focused on just one thing in his business, the real estate market in Mumbai. Of all the projects it has developed, it is a 60-acre Garden City project at Goregaon that puts Oberoi on a different trajectory, both in the scale as well as the breadth of operations. The story behind how he acquired the land for such a huge project is quite interesting. It was around the year 2000 that Mr. Oberoi stumbled upon the availability of a 60-acre land parcel in Goregaon. He decided to visit the site, and once he saw the site, he fell in love with it almost immediately. At that point of time, he was a mid-sized developer, real estate developer, and not really in consideration for the parcel. This was because once this land deal would be consummated, it would rank among the largest in India. But Vikas Oberoi would not give up that easily. He quickly decided that he would befriend the CEO of Novartis, the MNC that was selling the parcel, and convince the CEO to include Oberoi Realty as well in the list of the firms bidding for the land. When the bids were opened, Oberoi was found to be the highest bidder. However, the deal was still not consummated as the highest bid did not match the number Novartis was looking for. And because Mr. Oberoi was the highest bidder, he sat for the negotiations first and again readily agreed to match the number the Novartis board members had in mind. Now let's just consider how quickly Mr. Oberoi took decisions in the key moments. The time he took to fall in love with the land, the time he took to act on his intuition, the time he took to place the bid, and then later the time he took to increase the bid. These quick responses were possible only because of his deep understanding of the Mumbai real estate market and his balance sheet strength. Oberoi Realty is in fact by far the least leveraged developer in India. His balance sheet is so strong that it has earned compliments of Deepak Parekh, the doyen of housing finance industry in India. Mr. Parekh said this about Oberoi. In case of Vikas, every banker and lender felt he had the strongest balance sheet. He had cash and was never in financial trouble in all the years I've known him. Vikas Oberoi is the least leveraged developer I was aware of. This trait of using a strong balance sheet to take quick decisions when odds were in his favor has been evident in the history of Oberoi over the last two decades. Now, coming back to the land parcel in Goregaon, as I mentioned previously, Mr. Oberoi bought it for 100 crore. In this parcel, Oberoi has built a mall, a hotel, two commercial buildings, and two residential buildings with more than 1,600 apartments. As of today, the commercial properties and the hotel together alone generate more than 100 crores. The rent from the mall is another 100 crore. And each apartment there sells for 4 crore or more. And Oberoi is not done yet. The company is planning to build one more residential project and one more commercial building in the area, in the same land parcel actually. Both these new buildings might probably be the largest yet in this land parcel. This is the power of velocity. I hope you enjoyed the presentation, and I have been able to convey the role of velocity in business performance and how harnessing velocity effectively can lead to disproportionate benefits. The presentation is actually based on a case written in the Intelligent Fanatics website, where the website also covers the businesses and the entrepreneurs that have been covered in this presentation in more detail. I've also mentioned my email ID. I love meeting new people, and so I encourage anybody who's interested, who found the presentation interesting, to feel free to get in touch with me about velocity or about anything else. Thanks once again for this opportunity, John.
Rohit, thank you so much for the interesting presentation. Could you relate your understanding of velocity to some similar concepts out there, such as, let's say, in Silicon Valley or the tech world, the notion of being a first to market and fast scaling? How does that, what are the similarities or differences with how you understand velocity?
So thank you for the question, John. So first, I must admit that I'm not very aware of the startup or startup world in India or in the Silicon Valley. Having said that, at least from whatever little I've read of in the newspapers, I do believe that many of these startups are using this, are using this period to grow disproportionately in the hope that they'll become profitable at some point of time. And I am a pretty traditional and old school investor. I prefer to some extent slowness, because somehow I believe it is more durable when the foundation for growth is stronger. So while speed might seem very attractive, and that is, I'm not saying all startups, but many startups seem to be following that, I am not comfortable with the pace at which most of them are growing. So just as a similar analogy in a personal life, in India for sure, I would definitely prefer going at 40 kilometers per hour on the roads, which would ensure that I would reach on time to my home, as opposed to going at 80, 90 kilometers per hour, which just reduces the odds of my reaching home. And in the business contest, slower but reaching, being more durable is what matters to me, in my opinion, what matters more than growing as quickly as possible.
That's very interesting. Could you elaborate a little bit more on how you see slowness and velocity as compatible?
So the difference is the direction. Let me take an example from my personal life. Let me take a couple of examples. So because I just started my journey in the world of investing, I am extremely curious, and in the beginning, this led me to work on multiple companies in a short period of time, which created an illusion of understanding of businesses. And later I realized it was just that. It was an illusion because I did not take the time to let the flavor of the business sink in enough for me to take a considered decision. So what I was trying to do, using the analogy that we have used here, is to maximize speed and not velocity. So while it helped me tick a box which said that the number of companies that I've worked on is so many, my actual understanding of businesses was not strong enough. My fundamentals or the foundation was not strong enough. And so later I deliberately began slowing down, which means that on average, I would like to work not more than one company a month. And at times, one company I might work on for 3 months. And so even after a month, it might end up that I reject the company and might not go ahead with investing in the company. So while as compared to the beginning of my career, I am doing lesser number of, I mean, as compared to the first year in my career, I am doing lesser number of, I'm working on lesser number of companies a year. But I believe I'm more comfortable and I'm able to sleep better. And this slowing down of processes in a world which is focusing a lot on speed is making me personally more comfortable. But I have to say that this is an approach which works for me and might not work for anybody else. And the other example I would give from my personal life is that after I quit JP Morgan, I mean, obviously JP Morgan is a great paymaster. I decided not to decide to focus just on understanding more about investing. And so I basically said no to salaries and I basically said no to working in a firm because I believed if I work on my own, I'll probably learn faster. Now, the focus is to maximize the rate at which I learn because my belief is that once you maximize the rate at which knowledge accumulates, money and everything else will come as a beneficial outcome. So given the two choices I had, which would have been to maximize money by joining a firm or continuing at JP Morgan versus maximizing knowledge, I decided to choose the latter. And as of today, I mean, so far as till today, I continue to believe it to be the right decision. Because in the end, as I mentioned about compounding, what matters over the long term is the time and tenure of compounding. And I believe by going in the right direction and doing what you love, you maximize the tenure and rate of compounding. I mean, at least this is what I believe, but I need more time to substantiate this belief as well.
Wonderful. Well, Rohit, I think that's a good note to end it on. I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with you directly. Thank you for showing your contact information here on the screen. Once again, appreciate you taking the time to be with us and share your insights with our community.
I appreciate this opportunity once again, John. Thank you.
Goodbye for now.
Yeah, thank you.